one of the major focuses on Yom Kippurim is, of course, the Avodah. The Kohen Gadol plays a pivotal role in terms of doing the entire Avodah Yom Kippurim. The Gemara tells us, Mishnayis actually tells us in Masechet Yuma, that we have a tradition that the Kohen Gadol during the course of Yom Kippurim is told in the mikvah a total of 5 times. So I thought we would just speak a little bit lahalacha about the tefillah of the Yom Kippur, the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippurim, but not so much from Yom Kippurim angle, not so much in terms of the intricacies of the halachas as relates to Avodah Sayom. Of course, unfortunately, but we're saying we don't have the Beis Hamikdash yet. But there are actually some fascinating halachic discussions that emanate both from the Gemara and the Rishonim that speak to us halacha l'maisa in a wide area of different parts of halacha, that all the sources ultimately come back from the tevila of the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur. So we'll get a little bit of a discussion concerning some halachas as a wide range, as halachas tefillin, as halachas mikvos, as halachas Shabbos, which all ultimately have their source in some of the details concerning the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol. The Mishnah tells us that when the Kohen Gadol would go to the mikvah during the course of the day 5 times, the Mishnah goes Kiseder and tells us step by step about the Avodah Sayom. So the Mishnah tells us that he would go into the water, and all he would come out of the water, all of him is stopping, and he would dry himself off, which raises a red flag in the Mishnah Melech, who says, why in the world are the Tanoim telling us the fact that the Kohen Gadol would dry off? Is that relevant l'halacha? Whether or not he decided to dry his body, or whether he decided to drip dry, why in the world should that make the slightest bit of difference in halacha? Why does the Tana feel the necessity to spell this out explicitly in the Mishnah in Maseches Yuma? So the Mishnah Melech, based on this question, comes up with a tremendous chiddush. And the Mishnah Melech tells us that the reason why the Tana and the Mishnah in Yuma goes out of his way to tell us as to precisely what the Kohen Gadol did, that he actually dried himself upon completion of the tefillos, is to teach us that this was necessary api halacha. And for what reason was this necessary api halacha? Says the Mishnah Melech, because if he wouldn't have dried himself, so then when he would have gotten dressed and he would have worn the big day kahuna, there would have been a halachic problem. He would have had water separating between his body and the big day kahuna, and that would have disqualified the subsequent Avodah Sayom. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Vach and other places that there is a din that a Kohen, not only a Kohen, but a Kohen who does Avodah, so the halacha is that the Begadim have to be Yilbash al Besaro, they have to be on his body, they have to be on his flesh. Shelo Yedav Chaytet Binol Be'Besaro, that a Kohen is not permitted to have something as a Chatzitza, is not permitted to have anything that interferes and interrupts, that separates him as a barrier between his body and the Begadim. And if he does so, so the Avodah is considered to be Psuva, the Avodah is disqualified. Therefore, says the Mishnah Melech, if the Kohen Gadol would go to the mikvah, and immediately coming out of the mikvah would have water on his body, and then get dressed and do the Avodah, the entire Avodah Sayom subsequent would be Psuva min HaTorah, because Vuchas Chatzit. So therefore, the Tanah went out of his way to instruct us that the Kohen Gadol would actually have to dry himself off to avoid any potential Chatzitza problems. The Mishnah Melech then goes one step further and raises an objection. Is this really correct? Does water actually constitute a chatzitza? So he makes reference to a sugya that appears, actually a mishnah that appears in Maseches Mitzvot, quoted in the Gemara Maseches Pesachim, where the mishnah discusses whether something which is a dover lach actually is a chatzitza or is not a chatzitza. If a person is going to the mikvah and they have something wet on their body, does that potentially disqualify the tevila? We know the halachas of tevila, the mikvah teach us, and whenever a person goes to the mikvah, they're not permitted to have a davar achaytzeh, something that separates between the water and their body. There are different intricacies in halacha, what constitutes a chatzitza min haTorah, what constitutes a chatzitza min derabanan. But the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Mikvos that a davar lach is not chaytzeh. If a person has something wet, something moist on his body, that in and of itself does not qualify, does not constitute a chatzitza. So the Mishnah Melech then asks that himself, if that is the case, and a davar lach is not chaytzeh, so then we're back to square one, why does he have to remove the water? Why should the water be a chatzitza? So Mishnah Melech suggests that maybe in effect there are two different halachas of chatzitza. Sometimes the halacha tells us that you can't have a barrier, you can't have a separation between A and B, and sometimes the halacha tells us that A and B have to be in contact with one another. These are not synonymous, these are not identical. When the halacha is formulated in terms of you can't have a foreign matter, a foreign obstacle serving as a chatzitza, when the halacha is formulated in terms of being a davar chaytzeitz, so that's when the Mishnah of Maseches Mikvos tells us that a davar lach almost blends in, that's not considered to be a davar chaytzeitz. So when the halacha of chatzitza and chas tevila is given to us, That halacha says you can't have a foreign mat, you can't have something as an obstacle, as a barrier, being chaytzeitz. So the halacha is not included. However, when it comes to big day kahuna, it's a different halacha entirely. When it comes to big day kahuna, it's not a din of chatzitza. We colloquially call it chatzitza because it resembles chatzitza, but it's more than that, says the Mishnah Melech. There's a din that has to be al besaro. There's a din that there has to be a tziruf, there has to be a connection between the begadim and the besar ha-kohen. And as such, whenever the halacha is formulated in a positive manner, not in a negative manner, not in terms of the davar chaytes as a barrier, but rather in a positive manner that you have to have a connection between the two, therefore, even a davar lach would constitute as a quote-unquote a chatzitza, because at the end of the day, there is no such tziruf. The kiyum, the din of al-besaro, is not fulfilled, and therefore, the big dekuna would still pose a problem, notwithstanding the fact that there's a davar lach there. And this is the source, this is all derived, this chiddush gadol of the Mishnah Melech is all derived from the words olav in this topic, that the Kohen Gadol would actually dry himself, the reason being to prevent, we call quote-unquote chatzitzas, even though the velach is not a chatzitza, this is a different type of chatzitza, a chatzitza of al-besara. Some of the Haredim took this chiddush of the Mishnah Melech and then extrapolated it to an even more mechudish scenario, and that's in terms of luchos tefillin. What is the halacha in terms of luchos tefillin if a person has a devra chaytzeitz between their body and the tefillin that they're putting on? So there's actually a machlekes harishonim in hilchos tefillin. Is there even a problem of chatzitza and tefillin altogether? The Gemara never says explicitly that there's a problem of chatzitza. The Rosh has a chiddush, the Rosh has a deal from a sugya in Maseches Zvachim, that there is a problem of chatzitza, both for tefillin shayad and tefillin shorosh. Actually, the deal of the Rosh emanates from a sugya also relating to Big Day Kahuna. The Gemara discusses whether or not a Kohen, when he's doing a vote in the Beis HaMikdash, would a Kohen wear tefillin or not? So the Gemara draws a distinction between the Shalyad and the Shalrosh. The Gemara tells us in the second part of the Zvachim that a Kohen B'Shas HaVodah does not wear the tefillin Shalyad, whereas the Kohen does wear the tefillin Shalrosh. Why does he not wear the tefillin Shalyad? So the Gemara explains that for him to wear the tefillin Shalyad underneath his Big Day Kahuna, like we usually would wear a tefillin underneath our shirt sleeve, so that would be a problem. You couldn't do that because the tefillin would be a chatzitza. So here he's trying to do the mitzvah of the avodah, and he's going to disqualify the korban. He's going to have a davar chayitzei. So therefore, b'shas avodas hakorbanos, the kohen does not wear the tefillin shalyad. What about the tefillin shalrosh? So the Gemara explains that tefillin shalrosh would not pose a problem of chatzitza because there's a place on the head for a person to maneuver his tefillin plus his hat. He wears a mikbas. The kohen wears a mikbas, but there is still room. The mikbas doesn't take up the entirety of his head, and therefore there's room to maneuver to be able to put the tefillin in the right place, notwithstanding the fact that he has a mikbas on. When it comes to the shalyad, so the ksonas has to be worn on the entire body and the entire arm, and therefore there wouldn't be any room for him to put on the tefillin. So the Rosh raises the question, why does the Gemara discuss the wearing of the tefillin under the Big Dekuna? Why doesn't he simply put the tefillin on top of the Big Dekuna? So the Rosh infers from this that it must be that that would not be an option, because doing so would pose a problem the other way. It would be a chatzitz in terms of the tefillin. So the Rosh is medayik from that sugya that chatzitza disqualifies the ilchus tefillin. If it wouldn't be for the fact of ilchus chatzitza, then there would have been an option for him to put the tefillin on top of the Big Day Kahuna. And the fact that the Gemara doesn't give that option and rather exempts the Kohen, it's clear from here that the Rosh that chatzitza does pose a problem. So the Rosh happens to disagree with this. The Rosh for the Tshuva is docha the Rai of the Rosh and suggests an alternate reading of that Gemara. According to the Rosh, perhaps there wouldn't be a din of chatzitza in terms of ilchus tefillin. But at least according to the Rosh, for sure there would be. And in Shulchan Aruch, we try very hard to be machmir for this. Shulchan Aruch quotes that we try to insist on the din of chatzitza, both the shalyad and the shalrosh, under normal circumstances. If a person has a big shasat chak and they're not able to put on tefillin otherwise, then the post is discussed, maybe we can rely on the Rosh to some extent. But clearly the correct mahalach in the tefillin is to assume there would be a problem of a chatzitza. What is the source for the Indian of chatzitza? How did Chazal know that there is a chatzitza? According to the Rosh, we can infer it from the sugya in Maseches Zvachim, but ultimately it pushes the question back, how did Chazal know it to be true? So the Rosh explains, well, it's learned out from the same word, it's a din of al, and maybe that din of al carries over to Sharosh as well, argues the Rosh. So just as Big Day Kahuna have to be al-besaro, so the tefillin has to be al-yado as well. So come a group of Acharenim and say, if that's the case, that the din of chatzitza, if it exists according to the Rosh, is a din of al-besaro not all that different than the din of Big Day Kahuna, then it would come out that all the rules that govern the halachas of chatzitza by hilchos Big Day Kahuna would govern chatzitza by tefillin as well. According to the Mishnah Melech, tremendous chiddush, that if a person has water on his body between the big dekuna and his arm and his body, that would pose a problem. That would be a chatzitza, because the halacha of al-bisaro, and al-bisaro overrides that consideration of the velach not being chaytet. If that is the case, then the similar halacha should apply to Hilchos Tefillin. And if a person has water on his body, a person has water either on his arm, a person has water on his head in the Makom Tefillin, and he wants to put Tefillin on, that should pose a problem, according to the view of the Rush. That would be a chatzitza. So it's based on a combination of the Rush's comparison of Big Dekunas Hilchos Tefillin, then Hilchos Chatzitza applies. Based on the Rush's assumption that all learned out from the word al-Bisaro by Big Dekunas, al-Bisaro by Tefillin, and based on this Chiddush of the Mishnah Melech, the reason why the Kohen Gadol dried up was to avoid chatzitza problems, so we would have a tremendous chiddush, a tremendous chumin of tefillin, that one would not be able to put on tefillin if one's arm is wet. Maybe it's not the best for the tefillin anyway to put on tefillin, but that wouldn't disqualify the tefillin. But according to this chiddush of the Mishnah Melech, one could argue that the putting on tefillin if your body is wet, if your arm is wet, your head is wet, would be a serious problem, and perhaps wouldn't be yaitzin in the tefillin in that Torah if this is true. This would be a tremendous, tremendous chiddush. The Mishnah Berurah in no place makes any reference to this. The poskim seem to assume that this is not necessarily correct. Why is this not correct? What is the chitah? What is the problem with this chiddush? So the chora, the entire Mishnah Melech, is really a tremendous, tremendous chiddush. And the pashas, as far as it is that the Gemara seems to contradict what the Mishnah Melech is arguing. Because the premise of the Mishnah Melech's chiddush is that whenever the halacha requires al-bisaro, so all the leniencies, all the kulas of the velach fall by the wayside. So that does not seem to be borne out by the Gemara itself in the fifth paragraph of Masechet Pesachim. The Gemara Masechet Pesachim discusses the scenario of Erev Pesach, when the Beis HaMikdash was full of a lot of blood on the floor, the Shlitas HaKorbanos was taking place, and there was a lot of blood. So the Gemara raises the question, how could the Kohanim proceed to do the Avodas HaKorbanos? Isn't there a problem with Davar Chaytzeis? The Mishnah says in the second paragraph of Mizvachim that you cannot have a Davar Chaytzeis between the foot of the Kohen and the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. The floor of the Beis HaMikdash is the Davar Kadosh, and you can't have a Davar Chaytzeis between the two. He asks the Gemara, if so, doesn't the blood of the Korbanos itself serve as a Davar Chaytzeis? To which the Gemara concludes, no, it's not a problem, because it's a Davar Lach, and the Gemara makes reference to the Mishnah Mikvot that a Davar Lach is not a Chaytzeis. That halacha, that you have to have, you can't have a Davar Chaytzeis between the foot of the Kohen and the floor of the Beis HaMikdash, so the pashtus of the Gemara, the Sefer Berachim, the Sefer Zvachim is that halacha is identical to the halacha of not having a Davar Chaytzeis for Big Tekuna. In fact, it may even be the source of that din, the sugi of the Sefer Berachim, the Sefer Zvachim, that seems to link the two. That just as the Big Tekuna are Kadosh, and you can't have a Davar Chaytzeis, so to the Ritzpas Azorah, the floor of the Azorah is Kadosh, and therefore you can't have a Davar Chaytzeis as well. If that is the case, that these two halachas are identical, and concerning the Ritzpas Azorah, the Gemara says explicitly that Davar Lach is not a problem, so this undermines the entire pshat of the Mishnah Melech. The entire chiddush of the Mishnah Melech and the entire extension of the Mishnah Melech of those Achronim to Hilchos Tefillin, the Chor becomes problematic because it seems to be contradicted by the Gemara itself. So the fact that the Gemara in the fifth paragraph of Pesachim applies the leniency of Davar Lach to the Ritzpah, to the floor of the Azorah, notwithstanding the Gemara in the second paragraph of Zvachim that connects that, that links that, equates that to the Sugya Big Dei Kahuna, not having a Chatzitza, you see that even when the Halach is formulated in terms of Al, that the standards are the same, that a Davar Lach by definition is never a Davar Chaytzeis. If that's the case, then there's no source whatsoever for the Chiddush of the Mishnah Melech, and just to be mechadish that the dinim of Chatzitza are different seems to be very, very difficult. If so, we're back to square one. So what happened to the Mishnah Melech's original Raya? Why does the Mishnah say all of it is topic? I don't have a better answer for that, why it says all of it is topic, other than Mishnah is just telling you to say to what the Kohen Gadol did, that he never can dry himself on Yom Kippur. Is there any absolute deep halachic insight as to all of this topic? I'm not sure. But to build an entire Shtetl Torah that therefore you can't have chatzitza by a Davar Lach, by Big Tekuna, and to extrapolate to Chatzilin, and all kind of different chumas and chadushim, that seems to be very, very questionable. The Pashas, the Gemara, doesn't seem to bear this out. When the Kohen Gadol went to the mikvah in Yom Kippur five times, he's a clearly dinah min haTorah. He has to go to a mikvah that's obviously a kosher mikvah. Would anybody think that the standard of Hilchos Mikvos in the Beis HaMikdash would be compromised? Would anybody think that the type of a mikvah that the Kohen Gadol is using is any less than a kosher mikvah? So, strangely enough, according to at least some Rishonim, the standards of the mikvah in the Beis HaMikdash may have actually been less chomer than some of the standards that we would insist on Bizman HaZeh. One of the issues that comes up, which the Mishnah already raises in Masechet Yuma, was a very practical issue, is that it would sometimes be chilly, and the Kohen Gadol would begin the Avodah, the first of his tefillahs would be very, very early in the morning, and it would be chilly, and you could have a late in the year Sukkot, so a chilly Yerushalayim morning, and sometimes the Kohen Gadol would be an older person, it would be hard for him to be tovel in the cold water of the mikvah. So the Mishnah says they had a whole kind of a kunz, whole kind of a system set up in order to heat up the water. Hopefully we'll talk about that a little bit later on, about some of the issues in terms of Shabbat, Yom Kippurim, in terms of heating up the water. But Lamaisa, the water was sometimes heated up, to some degree at least take the chill out to some degree, for the Kohen Gadol. And this raises a question in terms of Hilchos Mikvaos. Is there anything wrong in terms of Hilchos Mikvaos with having a warm mikvah? What could possibly be wrong with having a warm mikvah? So there is a Gemara, Maseches Tainis, that has the phrase, that tefillah b'chamin miyika. Do we ever have tevilah? Is it ever possible to have tevilah, to be tugged in a body of water, that the body of water, that the mikvah is warm? So there's a machlekes that we've shown him what that statement meant. Why did Chazal consider that to be such a strange notion that one can have a warm mikvah? Why not? As long as the water was prepared properly, the water is megisham, it's coming, it's rainwater, it never was in a clean, it never was disqualified by being in a utensil. So if it meets the regular criteria of Hilchos Mikvaos, what could possibly be wrong with heating it up? So some Rishonim understood that the reason why you cannot have a warm mikvah is al pi halacha. Chazal made a gezeirah derabanan not to have a warm mikvah. Why did they make such a gezeirah derabanan? Because of the concern of mayim she'uvim. Mayim she'uvim means that any water that was in a kli, that was in a utensil, is automatically disqualified for the purposes of Hilchos Mikvaos. There is a machlekes in Rishonim what the source of this halacha is. Where did this din come from? It's in the Mishnayis, the Gemara, in many places that talk about the disqualification of Mayim She'uvim, but it's not clear exactly what the source of this din is. So the Gemara says in several places that Mayim She'uvim is only midirabanan, but the entire institution of disqualifying water that was in a kli is only something which is a problem midirabanan. The problem is that the Taras Kohanim darshins the halacha of Mayim She'uvim from a pasuk. The pasuk in Pasha Shemini talks about two different types of bodies of water to do tefillah in, one being a mayan and one being a bor mikveh mayim. A mayan means an underground spring. A bor mikveh mayim means a hole in the ground that was filled up with rainwater. So the Taras Kohanim has a drasha that says, "Ma mayim b'dei shemayim," just as a mayan, a spring, was never touched by human hands, so too a bor mikveh mayim, the water has to come about by itself, and it was filled up by using buckets of water, that would be disqualified. So the Rishonim have a big problem that the Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra, Maseches Bava Kama, talks about mayim she'uvim and applies the rule mayim she'uvim derabanan. Yet the Taras Kohanim seems to derive it from a pasuk. So the major machlekes of Rishonim had to resolve this contradiction. So some of the Rishonim were of the opinion that the entire institution of Mayim She'uvim, Hakol Mikol Kol, is only a problem with the Rabbanan. Why did they institute Mayim She'uvim? It's only a din de Rabbanan. Why would they make such a din? So Tosfos writes that the Stamina made a din of Mayim She'uvim because the Gezeirah maybe is going to be tovel in a kli itself. If you would take a big barrel and fill it up with water and tovel in it, if you would tovel in the kli itself, that for sure is possible in a Torah. A mikvah has to be mechubel karka, that's the karka or mechubel karka. So clearly that would be a problem in a Torah. So Chazal were concerned that if you let you tovel in water that was in a kli, next thing you know, you may be tovel in the kli itself. But according to one opinion in Tosfos, the entire institution of Mayim She'uvim was only midirabanan. Either Taras Kohanim quotes the pasuk for it, so Tosfos writes, it's an asmach to be amat, so midirabanan, it's not really what the pasuk means. So that's one opinion in Tosfos. Then Tosfos quotes another opinion, you know, that Mayim She'uvim may very well be min haTorah. So how come the Gemara calls Mayim She'uvim only midirabanan? So Tosfos differentiates between how much of the mikvah is Mayim She'uvim. If the entire mikvah is Mayim She'uvim, or rove of the mikvah is Mayim She'uvim, so then it will be possible min haTorah. If just a small amount is Mayim She'uvim, then it will only be a problem with the Rabbanan. So according to the second opinion in Tosfos, there is a psula Mayim She'uvim min haTorah sometimes. If rove or kol, or rove of the mikvah is Mayim She'uvim, then it's possible min haTorah. And that's what the Taras Kohanim is talking about. But the Gemara always speaks about Mayim She'uvim derabbanan. That means, if you have just a small amount, how much is a small amount? So the Mishnah tells us, if you have gimel lugim is not all that much, a revius that we call a revius, or a revius alug. So let's say it's approximately 3 ounces of revius, lug is approximately 12 ounces, 3 lugim is not all that much, 36 ounces. A mikvah is a tremendous amount of water. So if you have 36 ounces of mikvah water, that is mayim she'uvim, that will disqualify the mikvah only midirabban. So machlokes Rishonim, bottom line is the question, what exactly the status of mayim she'uvim is? Is mayim she'uvim legamer midirabbanan? And the only reason why they instituted it was a gezeira otu tvila bikli, or was Mayim She'uvim really a psul diaraisa sometimes, and therefore midirabanan, they extended it, even a small amount of Mayim She'uvim, even gimel lugin, Gezeira Otu, lest you come to be tovel in a mikveh that's rubo mayim shuvim. But everyone agrees, Mishnah is explicit in Masechet Mikvot. For sure, there's a din called mayim shuvim. The Raisa, the Rabbanan, there is a psul called mayim shuvim. So some Rishonim were of the opinion that Chazal disqualified heating up a mikveh, even though you don't have to heat up the mikveh by putting it into a kli. But in the days of Chazal, that was a normal way of doing it. How else would you heat up water? They didn't have a central heating systems. So the only way to heat up water, the logical way of heating up water, was you take a bucket, fill it up with water, and you put it onto the fire for a little while. That's the normal way of heating up water. So according to some Rishonim, if you figured out a kunz, how to heat up the water even without putting it into a bucket, you figured out a way to circumvent the using of a bucket, that's still a problem, because Chazal were afraid if you're going to be tovel in a hot mikvah, the next thing you know is you're going to be tovel in mayim she'uvim. So there's one opinion in Rishonim that says that hot mikvahs, warm mikvahs are off limits, legamre. You can never ever be tovel in a mikvah that's warm. It's a gezeira d'rabbanan as an extension of the gezeira of mayim she'uvim. And other Rishonim say, there's no such din, there's no such halacha. Other Rishonim say that when the Gemara says tefillah b'chamin miyika, the Gemara just says it's not going to happen. It's unlikely that you're going to have tefillah b'chamin, because practically in the days of Chazal it was very difficult. If you are living in a more technologically advanced society, you can figure out a way to heat up the water without putting it into a bucket and putting it on the fire. So there's nothing wrong, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with heating up mikvahs. So that's what our practice is. So at the very end, the very, very last sif in Hilchos Mikvot, so Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah discussed the Shaila, are you allowed to heat up a mikvah or not? So the Ramah quotes the Mekilim, that's what our minig is. The Shulchan writes in Hilchos Mikvot that we live in northern Europe, we live in the Vardik. He says that we're not going to rely on this school and no one's ever going to go to the mikvah. So we pass in the halacha, the whole thing was only concerned with the Rabbanah. Minatar, everyone agrees that if you don't make a mayim shuvim, it's okay. It was at worst chumrah mid the Rabbanah, and most of the Rishonim probably didn't even accept the chumrah. So the minhag olam in our community has been to be made, and not here in Mizrah. It's not as cold as it is in the Vardik in the middle of the winter, but afal pi kein, and our mikvahs are all heated, and we figure out we have different kunz and different ways technologically how to heat up the mikvah properly. So the Rishonim points out that in the Beis HaMikdash the water was heated. The Gemara Mishnah says in Yuma that the water was heated. So according to the Rishonim who say that you're not allowed to have a heated up mikvah, that's a chumrah mid the Rabbanan, how do they explain what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash? So the answer is that we have a rule called Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, that for the most part, many Dirim D'Rabbanan were lifted B'Makam HaMikdash, because the whole role of Dirim D'Rabbanan is to be keep you on the safeguard, to prevent you from violating Dirim D'Araisa. So the Gemara says in the end of Masechet Erevin, there are some exceptions to this rule, but by and large, we say Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, and we don't have to throw Chumras D'Rabbanan at you in the Beis HaMikdash. That's so important, and the Beis HaMikdash can run according to the standards of the D'Araisa. Because the Beis HaGadol there and the Kohanim are there, and people are more careful there, the Yerushalayim or a Mikdash, so it's unlikely that people are going to violate terrible Yisurim in the Makom Mikdash. So therefore we could be a little bit laid back, a little bit more lax in terms of certain Yisurim Derabanan in the Mikdash under the heading of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. There are exceptions to that rule also, but by and large, Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. So the Rishonim explained that within that opinion that a warm mikvah is a problem. So this would be a real problem mid the Rabbanan, but that real problem, the Rabbanan, wouldn't pose a problem in the Beis HaMikdash. So it comes out a very strange thing. According to some opinions in Rishonim, the mikveh that the Kohen Gadol used on Yom Kippur before going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim was pasul. That means if we would want to use such a mikveh, we would have to say you can't do that. Because mid the Rabbanan is pasul, it's a gezeira of the Mayim Shuvim. The only reason why we let the Kohen Gadol get away with it was because of Ein Shvus HaMikdash. Sounds like a very, very novel idea. That the mikta, the Beis HaMikdash, the highest level of Nesh up the Torah, the highest level of Tahara, wouldn't make the mark for a regular mikvah of Bizman Hazet. If we would want to build a hot mikvah, use a hot mikvah according to some Rishon, that would be possible in the Rabbanan, when the Beis HaMikdash in Yom Kippur was okay. Again, it's a strange type of an idea, but that's what comes out according to some Rishon. La Halacha doesn't really concern us, because La Halacha, if we assume like the other Rishonim, that practice is the Ramah right, if the other Rishonim thought that practice is like the other Rishonim, that a warm mikvah is perfectly acceptable. Notwithstanding the fact that a warm mikvah is acceptable, we're not concerned, we don't make that gezeira to mayim shuvim, but using a warm mikvah on Shabbos is a real problem, or a potential problem according to others, for a totally different reason, nothing to do with Hilchos Mikvot. It has to do with another din called the general prohibition against bathing in hot water on Shabbos, and to a certain extent extending to Yom Tov as well. What is wrong with bathing in hot water on Shabbos? The Gemara says in the third Pesach of Masechet Shabbos that technically speaking, min haTorah, there's nothing wrong with it, provided that the water was heated up before Shabbos. To heat up water on Shabbos, that's bishul min haTorah. But if you heated up the water from before Shabbos, what could possibly go wrong? So the Gemara tells us a story that in fact in the previous generations, not only was it permissible, they actually used to do it. It was very common. People would bathe in hot water on Shabbos. So It was a standard practice. Friday night people would go to go take in the Beis HaMechatz. The water was heated up from beforehand. But the Gemara tells us that there was a concern that began to take place, that Chazal realized that some of the bathhouse attendants weren't the most scrupulous individuals, and they would sometimes run short with some of the water, and it was hard to monitor that. What was thought to happen was, they would run short of water, so they would start to heat up the water on Shabbos, violating Chil Shabbos Deraisa. So when Chazal saw that that started to happen, so they made a gezeirah, and they said that from here on in, you're not allowed to take a bath, not allowed to shower in hot water on Shabbos, even though you personally know that you heated up the water yourself. But it's called Gezeiras HaBalon, Gezeiras Mechatzos. So they prohibited Midrabanon all kind of bathing and showering on Shabbos. Whether or not, and to what extent that Gezeira carries over to Yom Tov is a complicated discussion in and of itself, but at least concerning Shabbos, there clearly is a halacha called Gezeiras HaBalonim. So there is a big question in the poskim about, does this Gezeira apply in the context of Tefillah B'Mikvah? If one takes the approach that maybe Tefillah L'Chud or Rechitza L'Chud, and maybe Tefillah B'Mikvah is not even considered to be a Derech Rechitza, maybe it was never even included in the Gezeira, that would be wonderful. Then we wouldn't even be concerned that all the mikvahs could be heated up, as long as they heated up the head there, in whatever shape or form the heating up is done, not through Basel or Shabbos. So just as we're not concerned about heating up the mikvah during the week, we wouldn't be concerned for a person being tovel in a hot mikvah on Shabbos either. But if you take the view, like many poskim, that there is a problem of Gezeiras HaMechatzos, there is a problem of Gezeiras HaBalonim and heating up a mikvah, so this would pose a serious challenge. How to heat up, how, if at all, is it possible for a woman to go to the mikvah on Friday night if the mikvah is going to be warm? So some achronim might enochinami. It's a big problem, and there's no way to solve the problem. And, in fact, that the mikvahs cannot be heated up. You have to go to the cold mikvahs on Friday night. Other folks can try to come up with different innovative solutions how to get around this problem. Some achronim came up with a tremendous chiddush. Maybe when a woman goes to the mikvah on Friday night to avoid the issue of a hot mikvah on the one hand, it's very uncomfortable to go to an ice-cold mikvah. On the other hand, there's a problem with Gezeiras HaBalonim. So maybe what we should do is, we should send it to the mikvah during Ben HaShemashos. What in the world would we gain by going during Ben HaShemashos? Ben HaShemashos is a Safek Yom, Safek Laila. So concerning Dinim D'Araisa, we have to be Machmir. Concerning Dinim D'Rabbanon, we could be a little bit more lenient. So maybe we could permit her to go to the mikvah during Ben HaShemashos. Why? Normally, a woman is not permitted to go to the mikvah until it gets dark, but that's only mid derabbanan. Min haTorah, she could really go to the mikvah mida od yom on the seventh day. You apply the principle of mikta se yom kekulo or some application, some similar principle to that. That's a question of chaznida. What principle exactly is governing that halacha? But clearly, min haTorah, a woman can go to the mikvah on the seventh day of shivin akiyam mida od yom. The fact that she has to wait to go to the mikvah until the night time is a din mid derabbanan. It's a sugya at the end of maseches nida. So maybe one could argue that if it's already suffig yom, suffig laila, so maybe that chi of the rabban of waiting would be sufficed, and maybe we could permit a woman to go to the mikvah during Ben HaShemashos. So we can turn around and say, well, it's only Ben HaShemashos, and therefore, it's already suffig laila, and therefore we could permit you to go to the mikvah. But maybe we could turn around in the same breath and say, well, suffig yom also, because we don't really know whether it's laila, it's only Ben HaShemashos, so maybe the gezeirah of the rabban of bathing in hot water doesn't apply yet. If it's only a din derabbanan, maybe that din derabbanan doesn't kick in until it's Vaday Shabbos. So we let the woman go to the mikvah 15 minutes after Shkir. It's joined Ben HaShemashos. So it's a Safek Yom, Safek Laila. So we turn around vis-a-vis Hilchos Nida and we say, well, it's probably Laila already. And we turn around vis-a-vis Hilchos Shabbos and we say, well, it's probably Yom. So some Achronim have such an idea. So other Achronim say, it is hard to conceive of a greater Taitei Disaster, of a greater internal contradiction than that. How in the world you're going into the same mikvah, and at the same split second in time, you're saying it's Yom and Laila, depending on which area of halacha. For Orach Chaim, it's Yom, and for your day, it's Laila. That sounds very, very difficult to accept. So that idea does appear in real classic poskim. Have such an idea, and the Achronim discuss whether one could pull off such a stunt in terms of, or does that be such a gross violation of the principle of Tati Disaster. But this is all because the Achronim are trying very, very hard to try to solve the problem of how are you tovel in a hot mikvah? Isn't that a violation of Gezeiras Mechatzos? Perhaps one could argue that maybe what we could do is we can make the mikvah warm enough that it's comfortable enough not to be ice cold chilly, but on the other hand, it's not quite warm enough to be reach the point of Gezeiras HaBalonim. How hot does something have to be in order to reach the point of being a violation of Gezeiras HaBalonim in terms of bathing and showering? So that's a question in the poskim. Some folks can say that unless it's Yatza lettuce bow, it's not going to be included in the Gezeirah. Only if it's hot enough that you would touch it, you would pull your hand away, that's called the hot. Anything short of that is not considered to be hafz. Which other Chachamim say, if that was the gezeira, who in the world is taking a bath and a shower in yatzal lettuce bow water? So the answer is, well, it depends on how you're calculating yatzal lettuce bow. Some say the yatzal lettuce bow is determined by if a person is not expecting the water to be hot. So if I'm not expecting something to be hot, so my natural instinct will be to pull away at a much lower temperature, if I'm anticipating it. If I know that I'm putting myself in the hot water, so I'm getting myself all ready, all psyched up to go into that water, I'll be able to tolerate much more. So some Achmarim write that the number for Yatzal Lezbo maybe will give just an arbitrary number, it may not be correct. Let's say the number for Yatzal Lezbo perhaps is 110 degrees, where the person could tolerate more than that. So if a person knows that they're taking a hot shower, they can go into 115 degrees. So that was Gezeiras HaBalon. Once it's past the point of Yatzal Lezbo, but it's still tolerated for the person who knows that they're going to shower. If that's true, then we could hike the temperature up on the mikvah rather high, make it very, very nice and comfortable, but just short of yatzal lettuce bow. So other achranim say that that's not correct. Other achranim write that gezeirah sabalonim has nothing to do with yatzal lettuce bow. The gezeirah was, whenever it's called warm, whenever the oilman perceives that to be warm water, if it's cold water, that's nikur din mutter. We have a minig, the achranim point out, we have a minig Yisrael, not to bathe, not to shower, even in cold water on Shabbos, unless some very, very extenuating circumstances. Because there's so many shayos involved in bathing and showering on Shabbos, so we try to avoid it at all costs. But that's all as a chumra, as a later minig. Medina the Gemara, if the water is not warm, and according to some definition of warm means hot, yatzal as well. According to others, it just means if it's already beloshim b'nei adam warm, that would be a problem. So again, according to some achronim, the gzeir doesn't apply b'chlal to tefillah b'mikvah. According to many other achronim, it does apply, and you would have to measure the water and monitor to see that it doesn't apply. So it's interesting that in the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, they also had to deal with the shalom. We think that this is a new shalom we have to deal with now. That's been going on for thousands of years. That even if you could figure out a way to heat up the water of the heter on Yom Kippur, which itself is a challenge, don't you have to still be reckoned with the issue of Gezeiras HaBalonim? Unless one takes the approach, well, it's only Gezeiras HaBalonim, and maybe Gezeiras HaBalonim doesn't apply in the Beis HaMikdash, because Gezeiras HaBalonim is only a Nisa D'Rabbanan, so maybe Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. So the truth is, it's hard to know what the answer to all this question is because Gezeiras HaBalonim probably took place after the Churban. That the Gezeiras HaBalonim, the Gemara talks about, was in the days of Rabbi Danasi. It was actually in different stages of Gezeiras HaBalonim. The Gemara says that the original Gezeirah was not to bathe, but they still permitted going to the shvitz, going to the steam room. And then in the later years, then they even prohibited that also, because people used to go to the, they used to tell people they were going to the steam room, then they would really jump into the bath, and the non-frum bath attendants would start heating up the water for them. So the Gemara tells us the story in Maseches Brachos, and in Maseches Shabbos, and the days of Rabbi Danasi. Rabbi Danasi lived 150 years after the Churban. It was still permissible to go to the steam room on Shabbos. And the Gemara says Rabbi Danasi used to do that. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Danasi would make Shabbos early, he'd daven mayim early, he would give a shiur, and he wasn't ready. He wasn't ready to have a suda yet. So the Gemara says he would go lahaziyah, he would go in shvitz, he would sit in the shvitz. The Gemara says, why? How can he do that? Isn't that a violation of the extension of Gezeiras HaBalonim? So the Gemara says in Brachos, Karim Gezeirah Hava, that it was before the Gezeirah was made, and then the Gemara says that it was in the days of Rabbi Danasi that they actually put the final touches on this Gezeirah. So it's not, we don't know historically exactly what happened when. So it's quite possible in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, maybe the Gezeirah didn't apply. So maybe Rabbi HaMikdash will figure out. Maybe Rabbi HaMikdash will figure out how to deal with the Gezeirah of Alonim. But maybe it won't be a problem altogether, because maybe we'll just ignore the whole thing because of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. But the more serious issue involved in terms of the heating of the water in the Beis HaMikdash, forget about the issues derabbanan of a hot mikvah. Forget about the issues derabbanan of gezeiras habalonim. Don't we have a problem of bishul d'oraisa on our hands? That just the heating up of the water. How in the world are we going to heat up the water? So the bottom line is the Gemara explains that the water didn't really get all that hot. It just got taken the chill out of the water. How in the world do you take the chill out of the water? The Gemara says that the way to do it, the way they used to do it, is the Mishnah records in the Maseches Yuma that they used to take metal, they take strips of metal, take iron pieces of from before Yom Kippur, they would put it onto the fire from before Yom Kippur, get it good and hot, it would sit in the fire, and then the next morning they would take a matil masachat zayne, they would take these hot pieces of metal and throw it into the cold water, and that would take the chill out. It wouldn't make it boiling hot, so it would take the chill out of the water a little bit. So the question becomes, is that okay? Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? Yom Kippur has the same standards of Malacha Shabbos. This year it's Shabbos Mamish. So how are you allowed to do such a thing? Take hot metal and throw it into cold water. Isn't that some kind of a Chil Shabbos problem? So So the Gemara has a discussion about what's called mitzarif. The Gemara says, isn't that a violation of mitzarif? The question is, what in the world is mitzarif? So mitzarif means when you have a hot piece of metal, and the process of cooling off the hot piece of metal by putting it into water is considered to be a potential malacha called mitzarif. Which malacha, which is the third nine malacha, mitzarif is not a malacha in and of itself, which is the third nine malacha is mitzarif potentially a told or potentially a part of? So that's a big question. It may be part of malacha's kibui, may be related to the malacha of kibui of extinguishing. That's assuming that a piece of metal that's glowing is considered to be a fire in the first place, that's considered to be an ash in the first place, which is a whole another important sugya. So that's one potential malacha, malacha's kibui. Or there may be another potential malacha, malacha's macha bepatish, that it may be the completion of something, because that was the gemar malacha's ha'umim, the way to complete the metal making process was to take the metal and then heat it up, and then to throw it into the cold water. Apparently would cause the metal to harden, to become a little bit more miskayim, and that was the gemar ha'dov, that was the macha bepatish. So there are two potential malachas involved every time you're involved in the act of mitzarif. It's a potential malacha of kibui, it's a potential malacha of macha bepatish. So the Gemara raises the question, Maseches Yuma, v'hakom mitzarif? The Gemara says, what are you doing? How can you permit throwing the hot metal into the water? Doesn't that pose a serious malacha problem? You're trying to make it comfortable for the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur, and you're violating Yom Kippur itself. So the Gemara says, no, it's not so terrible, because it's a davar shein miskaving. Because the person is not really interested in that happening. His goal is to heat up the water, and so it's a davar shein miskaving vis-a-vis the act of tziruf. So Gemara says, but that's not so poshut, because it's the Tana Rabbi Yehuda who is speaking. Rabbi Yehuda is the Tana Maseches Yuma who records for us this practice. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, that they used to be throw the Shasha Shabarzel into the water on Yom Kippur. And we know that Rabbi Yehuda's view is Dabar Shein Miskavin is also. There is a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, both in Shabbos and in Kol Tzar Kula. If I do an action, the action itself is permissible, but there is a chance that a malacha may result. There's a chance that an issa may result. So as a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon, am I permitted to act in such a way in the first place? So according to Rabbi Shimon, Dabar Shein Miskavin is alright. There's nothing wrong with Dabar Shein Miskavin. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Dabar Shein Miskavin is also. So we haven't deposited Rabbi Shimon in this one. We haven't deposited, the Gemara says, most of the time we do Rabbi Shimon, we follow Rabbi Yehuda. This is one of the exceptions, the Gemara says, that we pass him like Rabbi Shimon. So we hold that Dabar Shein Miskavin is okay, and therefore we probably wouldn't have such a serious problem with many of these kinds of shadows. But the Gemara is concerned, according to Rabbi Yehuda, isn't that a problem? According to you, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Dabar Shein Miskavin is osur, how can you defend what the Kohen Gadol did based on the principle of Dabar Shein Miskavin? So the Gemara gives some kind of a cryptic answer. The Gemara says, no, this is different because it's the Rabbanan. And as the Machlokes Rishonim, what that law means and what the Gemara says in the Gemara, it's unclear exactly what the meaning of that answer is. But it's something to do with the Rabbanan versus the Araizes. So what is the Gemara answering for us? So Rashi understood, but the Gemara's answering is as follows. That even though Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that Dabar Shein Miskavin is generally Asur, but Medivam Amurim Dabar Shein Miskavin is Asur, that's on Isurim de Araisa. But I assume the Rabbanon, we have a right, even Rabbi Yehuda would conceive that Dabar Shein Miskavin is mutter. So what the Gemara is answering is that this act of tziruf is not really a deraisa. Why is it not a deraisa? It falls short of being deraisa. It's not a real machmir baptish, it's not a real kibbutz, and you have to learn all the sugyas and shabbos to figure out why it should or should not be a malacha deraisa. But basically, according to Rashi, the conclusion of the Gemara is that the worst case scenario is that there's only a Rabbanon taking place here, and therefore, Dabar Shein Miskavin doesn't apply yet to their abundance, it only applies to their ISIS. Why should that be so? If you really believe, like Rabbi Yehuda, that Dabar Shein Miskavin is a problem, why should there be a heter across the board, a Dabar Shein Miskavin and their abundance? So Rabbi Kivegu and his Chidushim and Yuma suggest that maybe the issue of Dabar Shein Miskavin is really no worse than a suffix. It means when I'm doing X and there's a chance that Y may happen, so Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do it. Why can't you do it? Because it's a suffix, and you're allowed to do a suffix, yes sir. So Rabbi Kivegu explains, Sufik deraisa l'chumra, Sufik derabanan l'kula. So the corollary of Dabar Shein Miskavin being osur is that it cannot possibly be osur by Isurim derabanan, because any Dabar Shein Miskavin by definition cannot be any more chumra than a Sufik, and a Sufik derabanan is going to be l'kula. So that's how Rabbi Kivegu suggests the Lomdus and Rashi, why there should be a difference between Dabar Shein Miskavin and deraisa and a derabanan. According to Rashi, this whole Shtibul Torah, this whole Rabbi Kivegu emanates from the Tefillah of the Kohen Gadol. Because Nebuch the Kohen Gadol had to have a little bit of a warm tevilah, so they had to come up with a kunz of heating up the water. Heating up the water runs into a problem, the Rabbanan of Mitzarev, and the only heter was based on Dabar Shein Miskavin. thereby indicating that Tavashem Miskaven is mutter under Rabbanan. For us, it's not so important, this part of the Shia. I mean, hopefully the Shia is important, but this conclusion, the Halacha, is not so important, because we Paskin Tavashem Miskaven is mutter anyway, so we're not so bothered with the Kasha. But according to the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, who was concerned with Tavashem Miskaven, Rabbi Yehuda would concede by the Rabbanans that it wouldn't be a problem. So this is all assuming that Rashi's pshat is the correct pshat in the Gemara. So there's a long, almost two hundred long, a Taisin in Maseches Yuma, where Taisin offers an entirely different pshat in this idea. Taisin says that when the Gemara says the Rabbanan, the Gemara is not addressing the Tzarif. The Gemara is not saying the Tzarif is the Rabbanan. The Tzarif may be the Araisa. But the Gemara is saying is as follows, that the whole prohibition of Dovashen Miskafim, even according to Rav Yehuda, is itself only a prohibition with the Rabbanan. That means we thought that the machlekes of Yudin the Chachamim, I'm sorry, Yudin Rav Shimon was a machlekes on a love of the Araisa. Not true, says Tosfos. The machlekes of Yudin Rav Shimon is only a machlekes on a love of the Rabbanan. On a love of the Araisa, even Rav Yehuda concedes that Dovashen Miskavim is in fact permissible. So Tosfos runs into a brick wall with this shtickle Torah, with this interpretation of the Gemara, because there are other Gemaras later on in Sefer Shabbos, where the Gemara is very clear that Rav Yehuda's view of Dovashen Miskavim is in fact min haTorah. The Tosfos poses this challenge to themselves and they say, how about we learn Pshat and Yuma that Dovashen Miskavein is only a problem with the Rabbanan? The Gemara says explicitly that it's a Deraisa. So Tosfos says, no, there's a big difference between Dovashen Miskavein of Shabbos and Dovashen Miskavein in Kolot Derekula. Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon are fighting it out in all areas of Halach, Shabbos and all areas of other Shalas in Halach as well. So Tosfos says the two issues, the two machloksim are not identical. In Kolot Derekula, so Rabbi Yehuda's shita really is Dovashen Miskavein is a problem in the Torah, and Rabbi Shimon says it's butl chachila. So in Kol Torah Kula, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are arguing extremes. Rabbi Yehuda says it's also in the Torah, and Rabbi Shimon says it's butl chachila. But in Hilchas Shabbos, particularly, even Rabbi Yehuda concedes it cannot possibly be the Araisa. Why can it not possibly be the Araisa? Because of the magic words Melechet Machshavas Asher Torah. That in Hilchas Shabbos we have another criterion that doesn't apply in Kol Torah Kula. That you have to be aware, cognizant, planning, as we thought out process of what you're doing, that's all subsumed, all part of the category of Meleches Machshaves, and if it's lacking Meleches Machshaves, it cannot possibly be a Torah prohibition. Therefore, Tosfos writes that the Gemara in Yuma is talking about Hilchos Shabbos, Yom Kippur follows the rules of Shabbos, it is a Melocha. So true what the Gemara says in Shabbos, that in Kol Torah Kula, Dovashen Miskavein is a prohibition in a Torah. But in Hilchos Shabbos, in Hilchos Yom Kippurim, it's at worst only a derabanan because of Melechet Machshavas Asher Torah. So when the Gemara says Hacha derabanan, unlike Rashi who says Hacha derabanan means that Mitzarif is derabanan. No, it's like Mitzarif is deraisa. Hacha derabanan means that this is Shabbos, this is Yom Kippur, this is Melechet Machshavas Dikadinim, they're governed by the leniency of Melechet Machshavas, and therefore it's only midirabanan. So when you throw that piece of hot metal into the water, all you're doing, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is violating the Nisad Rabbanan. But then Tosfos further challenges themselves, so it's still awesome at the Rabbanan. What gives us a right to violate Isurim Rabbanan? Bishlam, according to Rashi, that the word the Rabbanan meant that Dovashen Miskavein doesn't apply to Isurim Rabbanan, so that it's Mutal Chetchila. But according to us, says Tosfos, that we're saying Pshat, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Dovashen Miskavein in Shabbos is still a prohibition of the Rabbanan. What right do we have to do it Lechetchila? So Tosfos says, if you look, there's another gears of the Gemara that Rashi didn't have. The next few words are Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. That Iruchinami, that Ataka is an Issa D'Rabbanan. There's something fundamentally wrong with what we're doing. We would never permit this Chutz L'Mikdash, but because it's in the Mikdash, Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. So it comes out that there are several areas of Hilchos Tevilos Yom Kippurim that may ultimately be falling back on Kulos of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash. There are things that we would never do outside the Mikdash. We wouldn't. According to some Rishonim, we would never have a hot mikveh even on a Tuesday. According to other Rishonim, we would never be tovel in a mikveh that's warm on a Shabbos. And according to Tosfos, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would never permit Dovashen Miskavein on a Shabbos l'maisa l'chetchila. The reason why we're willing to chisel away, we're willing to cover all these kulas, was dafka ultimately because of anxious b'mikdash. Because we're so comfortable with the fact that the Meir HaMikdash is so clear, but that's going to prevent any confusion. That's going to prevent any complication. That's going to prevent any Isurim from being violated. L'chora, this idea that we see that keeps on playing out in terms of the halacha, both in terms of Hilchos Mikvot and Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Yom Kippur, Hilchos Melachos, the principle of Ein Shvus B'Mikdash And that can almost be a protection against chait. So I think that's something just a little bit, to close a little bit of divrei machshava relating to Yom Kippur in general and really Yerushalayim as a whole. That this idea of ein shpus b'mikdash really is predicated with an assumption that when a person is in a place of mora, when a person really, really sees the mora shechin in front of him, he sees the kohanim b'avodasim, he sees the levim b'duchan, he sees the Sanhedrin paskening shailas, he sees the mora shechina, so he's going to be so overwhelmed with Yerushalayim, so he's not going to be chayte. It's going to be so difficult. Who's going to be chayte? So we almost relax the standards a little bit because we're so confident, we're so comfortable of ein shpus b'mikdash. So this idea that being in a situation of Meira, being in a situation of Yerushalayim, is the ultimate barrier, the ultimate protection against chait, so then we can begin to understand the whole notion of a person having to do tshuva, even for things that are done by shogeg. We know that. Shogeg is not necessarily an excuse in halacha. Sometimes shogeg requires still a korban chatas, and sometimes other korbanos that are necessary, for a certain chatoim, and the Rambam begins with the tshuva by saying that a person has to be chayz with tshuva even on the shpagos. We say in Yom Kippur, also. So we clap on chait for various on b'shoyim. We have to sometimes ask ourselves, why are we chayzim b'tshuva? Was it my fault? I didn't know about it. I forgot it was Shabbos. I didn't know it was also. Why am I being held responsible for that as well? So the chora, the answer, at least part of the answer is that in Uchinami, that although the mice itself, to a certain degree, may not require, in a sense, a full tshuva, but if a person did something b'shoyim, so sometimes that's indicative, sometimes that's a raya, that there was a degree of lack of Mara Shemayim there. There was a little bit of a lack of Yerushalayim there, a little bit of a deficiency in Yerushalayim. If you really, truly would have had Shvisi Hashem and Negdi Summit, if the Rebbe Hashem Yir Al-Pneichem would have really, really been there in its fullest force, so then the Chet Pishegi wouldn't have happened. So you're right. In the end of the day, it wasn't, quote-unquote, your fault for that particular Maisa, but perhaps you are at fault for having your life and living in a situation where the Yerushalayim wasn't as clear to you, wasn't as blatant to you as it should have been. So Ein Shpus B'Mikdash carries with it a very, very powerful lesson. Ein Shpus B'Mikdash is a kula, but the principles behind Ein Shpus B'Mikdash is a tremendous mechayit that hopefully it opens up our eyes to the fact that the more we live our lives in the state of Mikdash, the more we live our lives with the Rebbe Shalom's presence in front of us, the more the Torah and the Avodah of Mikdash becomes a real part of our lives, so that in a sense the more protection that we're going to have, the less likely that we're going to trip up, the less likely even Chatan B'Shogeg are going to take place. Hopefully the Rebbe Shalom should give us the Siyata D'Shemaya in terms of living our lives in the fullest sense of Mikdash. And hopefully maybe we might have Mikdash. Many of the Shayas that we touched upon, we'll have to wait to see how they pass in the base of Mikdash. We'll find out some of the details of Ilchus Mikvot and Ilchus Tfilin and Big Day Kahuna and Ilchus Shabbos and Ilchus Chatzitzas. We'll try to find out what the answers are. But in the interim, at least in Shalom Forest Hussein, we see a little bit of learning some of the sugyas of Avodas Hakavanah, sugyas relating to Yom Kippur. And we see that in learning in general, that very often, even the sugyas that at first glance seem to be the least relevant lamaisa, Kol Ta'akula is the Chachma of the Rebbe Hashem, is one big package, one big picture. And sometimes you can conclude a sugya in a halach lamaisa topic that some of the rayas come from the most obscure parts of the Gemara, which are not relevant. It's all part of Teres Hashem. The Mimah Peshbrach should open up a rayas to be able to observe his mitzvahs properly and to have the proper Yerushalayim as we approach the Yom Kippur.